Our story opens in the mind of Luther L., L for Leroy, Fliegler, who is lying in his bed, not thinking of anything but just aware of sounds, conscious of his own breathing and sensitive to his own heartbeats. Lying beside him is his wife, lying on her right side and enjoying her sleep. She has earned her sleep, for it is Christmas morning, strictly speaking, and all the day before she has worked like a dog, cleaning the turkey and baking things and, until a few hours ago, trimming the tree. The awful proximity of his heartbeats makes Luther Fliegler begin to want his wife a little, but Irma can say no when she is tired. It is too much trouble, she says, when she is tired, and she won't take any chances. 3 children is enough. 3 children in 10 years. So Luther Fliegler does not reach out for her. It is Christmas morning, and he will do her the favor of letting her enjoy her sleep, a favor which you will never know he did for her. And it is a favor, all right, because Irma likes Christmas, too. And on this one morning, she might not mind the trouble, might be willing to take a chance. Luther Fliegler more actively stifled the little temptation and thought the hell with it, and then turned and put his hands around his wife's waist and caressed the little rubber tire of flesh across her diaphragm. She began to stir, and then she opened her eyes and said, "My God, Lute, what are you doing?" "Merry Christmas," he said. "Don't, will you please?" she said. But she smiled happily and put her arms around his big back. "God, you're crazy," she said. "Oh, but I love you." And for a little while, Gibbsville knew no happier people than Luther Fliegler and his wife, Irma. Then Luther went to sleep, and Irma got up and then came back to the bedroom, stopping to look out the window before she got into bed again. Lantananga Street had a sort of cottony silence to it. The snow was piled high in the gutters, and the street was open only to the width of 2 cars. It was too dark for the street to look cottony, and there was an illusion even about the silence. Irma thought she could yell her loudest and not be heard, so puffily silent did it look, but she also knew that if she wanted to, which she didn't, she could carry on a conversation with Mrs. Bromberg across the way without either of them raising her voice. Irma chided herself for thinking this way about Mrs. Bromberg on Christmas morning, but immediately she defended herself. Jews do not observe Christmas except to make more money out of Christians, so you do not have to treat Jews any different on Christmas than any other day of the year. Besides, having the Brombergs on Lantananga Street hurt real estate values. Everybody said so. The Brombergs, Lute had it on good authority, had paid $30,000 for the Price property, which was $12,500 more than Will Price had been asking. But if the Brombergs wanted to live on Lantananga Street, they could pay for it. Irma wondered if it was true that Sylvia Bromberg's sister and brother-in-law were dickering for the McAdams property next door. She wouldn't be surprised. Pretty soon there would be a whole colony of Jews in the neighborhood, and the Fliegler children and all the other nice children in the neighborhood would grow up with Jewish accents. Irma Fliegler had hated Sylvia Bromberg since the summer before, when Sylvia was having a baby and screamed all through the summer evening. She could have gone to the Catholic hospital. She knew she was having a baby, and it was awful to have those screams and have to make up stories to tell the nice children why Mrs. Bromberg was screaming. It was disgusting. Irma turned away from the window and went back to bed, praying that she would not get caught and hating the Brombergs for moving into the neighborhood. Lute was sleeping peacefully, and Irma was glad of the warmth of his big body and the heavy smell of him. She reached over and rubbed her fingers across his shoulder where there were 4 navel-like scars, shrapnel scars. Lute belonged on Lantananga Street, and she, as his wife, belonged on Lantananga Street. And not only as his wife. Her family had been in Gibbsville a lot longer than the great majority of people who lived on Lantananga Street. She was a Doan, and Grandfather Doan had been a drummer boy in the Mexican War and had a Congressional Medal of Honor from the Civil War. Grandfather Doan had been a member of the school board for close to 30 years before he died, and he was the only man in this part of the state who had the Congressional Medal of Honor. Lute had the French Croix de Guerre with palm for something he said he did when he was drunk, and there were a couple of men who got Distinguished Service Crosses and Distinguished Service Medals during the war, but Grandfather Doan had the only Congressional Medal of Honor. Irma still thought she was entitled to the medal because she had been Grandfather Doan's favorite. Everyone knew that. But her brother Willard and his wife, they got it because Willard was carrying on the name. Well, they could have it. It was Christmas, and Irma did not begrudge it to them as long as they took care of it and appreciated it. Irma lay there, fully awake, and heard a sound. Cack-thock, cack-thock, cat-thock. A car with a loose cross-chain banging against the fender, coming slowly up or down Lantananga Street. She could not make out which. Then it came a little faster, and the sound changed to cack-cack-cack-cack-cack-cack. It passed her house, and she could tell it was an open car because she heard the flapping of the side curtains. It probably was a company car, a Dodge. Probably an accident at one of the mines, and one of the bosses was being called out in the middle of the night before Christmas, to take charge of the accident. Awful. She was glad Lute did not work for the coal and iron company. You had to be a college graduate, Penn State or Lehigh, which Lute was not, to get any kind of decent job with the coal and iron. And when you did get a job, you had to wait for someone to die before you got a decent promotion. Anne called out at all hours of the day and night like a doctor when the pumps didn't work or something else happened. And even your ordinary work on the engineering corps, you came home dirty, looking like an ordinary miner in short rubber boots and cap and lunch can. A college graduate, and you had to undress in the cellar when you came home. Lute was right. He figured if you sell 2 Cadillacs a month, you make expenses, and anything over that is so much gravy, and meanwhile you look like a decent human being and you're not taking chances of being crushed to death under a fall of top rock or blown to hell in an explosion of black damp. Inside the mines was no place for a married man, Lute always said. Not if he gave a damn about his wife and children.